Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, how much money is enough for the Bahraini royal family? Since the Al-Khalifa regime has taken power in the 20th century, the royal family has taken anywhere from between a fourth of all the country's oil revenue to 50%. That's according to public records. Since 2001, this figure is no longer publicized. Now, the Bahraini ruler, King Hamad ibn Isa Al-Khalifa alone, is estimated to be worth $5 billion. Much of the land on the island nation is declared government property and confiscated by the regime. All of this serves as just a backdrop to just some of the injustices that the Bahraini people face and their quest for equality in their own countries. Bahrainis have been demanding equal rights for 5 years now, and the demands have been met by a brutal crackdown from the regime as well as their Saudi supporters.
Hundreds of people have taken to the streets in several cities and villages in Bahrain to mark the fifth anniversary of the popular uprising. And in solidarity with the protesters, other people shut their shops and businesses for days.
The Bahraini people are resolute in their opposition to the Al-Khalifa family dictatorship, and they are very strong.
Bahraini regime forces fired birdshot and tear gas to quell the fresh anti-government demonstrations which broke out nationwide. The protesters are calling for the downfall of the Al-Khalifa regime, democratic changes and the release of political prisoners. The mass protests, which began on February the 14th, 2011, were met with a heavy-handed security response, leaving a large number of protesters dead and injured. Others died in custody after being tortured. Thousands of protesters and activists have been put in prison since the 2011 uprising. Despite this all, many analysts believe the revolution has grown.
Every opposition leader is in jail, and yet the revolution continues. The protests continues. The opposition grows. International support for the Bahraini people grows.
The Al-Khalifa regime has been enjoying foreign support in its crackdown against the opposition. Certain countries have thrown their weight behind Manama since the beginning of the uprising. Over the past 5 years, British arms sales to Bahrain have increased significantly. According to the Campaign Against Arms Trade Organization, the UK has signed arms deals with Bahrain worth over $65 million between 2011 and 2015. Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates have also sent troops and armored vehicles to Bahrain to help the monarchy suppress the pro-democracy opposition movement. 5 years after the first wave of demonstrations rocked Bahrain, people are still hoping that their resistance would bring about democratic reforms, progress on human rights, as well as accountability for past and present abuses.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of Berlin, Sayed Yusuf Al-Muhafda, Vice President of Bahrain Center for Human Rights, and out of Washington, D.C., Professor George Washington University, Mr. Nabil Mikhail. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in Washington. Since 2011, the Bahraini people have taken to the streets, but many have been killed in prison or even had their citizenship rescinded. In your perspective, what does this say about the type of regime that the Bahraini people are confronting?
It is not willing to reach any type or to reach out to the opposition. There should be some dialogue, some serious consideration of the demands of the opposition. Because as a student of politics, and I can see that the Bahraini opposition has been able to articulate its demands, I think, sophisticatedly. So this is very important. Also, I think it has to be viewed as a local opposition, as a domestic concern. You cannot ignore the opposition. Political scientists say that the world is witnessing a process of awakening, global awakening. People are demanding more freedoms, more rights, more participation in the decision-making process. Bahrain and any other country should not ignore the opposition. Speaking from Washington, on the other hand, I do feel that the Obama administration has ignored Bahrain, has ignored the Gulf area, has also ignored the conflict in Syria, which actually has repercussions on the Gulf. So I believe that there could be some offices in Washington, D.C., that whose representatives may have met with some figures from the Bahraini government and the Bahraini opposition. And I believe that I have met one or two of these opposition leaders when they spoke in Washington before. And that was a long time ago. That was 20 years ago. So the opposition has a domestic foundation. This is very important. So it is time and it is better to talk seriously with the opposition and see what the two sides can do together.
All right, stay with me. Crossing over to Berlin, Mr. Yusuf Al-Muhafda. Would you say the original goal of the people taking to the streets in 2011 was the overthrow of the regime, or was it just reforms? And now what would you say the main demand of the protesters are today?
Well, I mean, in 2011, the protester went out on the street to call for reform and democracy and elected government, as you know, that the prime minister in his position since 1971 until today. So the protester said, we want elected government as every as all the government in the Western country, and more justice, more human rights, more freedom, more rights, and all that. So, and after that, they were severely attacked by the government of Bahrain and also by Saudi Arabia and Emirates. Troops came to Bahrain to attack the protester. And the message was, democracy is not allowed in Bahrain. Democracy is not allowed in the Gulf. They are afraid that it could turn to their countries. So, I mean, after the after 5 years now from the uprising, I think there are two groups in Bahrain. One group still believe in still demanding constitutional monarchy with like a correct constitutional monarchy. Now they are claiming that it is constitutional monarchy, but it is absolute monarchy with absolute power. The king has all the power. So there is a group calling for constitutional monarchy, and there is other group in the opposition who are calling for the fall down of the regime, especially after the huge number of people killed and in jail. Mm-hmm. So this is the situation, two split group calling, have two different demands.
Well, Mr. Mikhail, 5 years later, still no signs that the people are ready to stop their protests. Why do you think that the regime continues to pursue that crackdown when obviously everything that they've used so far has not stopped the people and their demands in 5 years?
Because, for one, the ruling elite in Bahrain does not feel threatened by the opposition. They do not want to legitimize it. They do not want to enter into a serious discussion with it. So their initial attitude is one of just leaving it alone. In fact,
why wouldn't Why wouldn't they feel threatened when the demonstrations continue, when more and more people have been locked up, when there obviously have been clashes there? And it definitely does not serve as a positive image of the regime. So why don't they feel any pressure?
This is a good question. Frankly, I am not a specialist in Bahrain, but I studied politics and I teach politics. So usually a government does not feel threatened by an opposition group if the that attitude is attributable to two factors. First, they can have enough police power to repress that to repress that protesting group. So even if there are people in the streets shouting and crying, the police can control them. Secondly, if the government can mobilize enough people, has many resources, has many channels to marginalize, and I put emphasis on the word marginalize, any opposing group, they do not want it to be part of the mainstream of the politics of that of any nation, in this case Bahrain. And I should add, due to the area changing, like we have had the Arab Spring for 5 years now, then basically it backpedaled, it retreated. That encouraged a lot of governments not to feel in danger of any opposition group.
Okay.
The opposition will not muster enough support. They will defeat themselves. So it's a process of self-defeat.
What about that? Turning back to Berlin, our guest in Washington basically said that the government does not feel threatened. Perhaps is there another possible scenario that really could not care less about the demands of the people if an entity thinks that it is better, more important, that it can totally ignore? Because what we're talking about coming in, we're not talking about local Bahraini police. We're talking about security forces. We're talking about troops from Saudi Arabia, from the UAE, implementing this crushing crackdown. Your take on this, sir?
Well, as I think, I mean, of course, we are in Bahrain, as you just said. I mean, we are not only facing the Bahraini government or Bahraini police or Bahraini army. All the Gulf are against us. I mean, especially led by Saudi Arabia and Emirates. Saudi Arabia and Emirates troops and army are still in Bahrain. Their rule is just to ban any democratic movement in Bahrain. So, I mean, you can imagine that the majority, even if we are a majority, but civilians with and all these countries against us, Saudi Arabia and Saudi. So we are facing many countries. This is from one hand that we are facing many countries from the Gulf against the democracy in Bahrain. And on the other hand, also, UK, it's against democracy in Bahrain. They only, between time to time, when there is a pressure from a human rights organization, they ask the government to respect human rights, and that's it. But they don't call for democracy in Bahrain because of the, military interest, and they are, because we live in Bahrain and in the Gulf, we live in a we are in a rich country, in a rich Gulf. So the West, and specifically UK and US, they don't care about our people if they get democracy or not. They are important only about their interests. The United States also, they don't call for democracy in Bahrain, although they call, they say that the Syrian people deserve democracy, but that's the majority in Bahrain, in the rich Gulf, they don't deserve democracy. I think this is hypocrisy and double standard. So that's why we as activists, we want one language from United States and also from UK. And we believe that these two countries are against democracy in Bahrain. They are supporting human rights, yes, but not democracy in Bahrain. They have interest, the 50 fleet in Bahrain, and also the Gulf is buying arms sales from the from US and UK. So they don't want to upset Saudi Arabia. They don't want to upset Emirates, who are buying weapons, who are buying arms, who are buying, who are selling for them oil. So I think we are victims of hypocrisy. Because of this struggle, you can just say that the government of Bahrain, they don't feel a threat. They are supported by two major countries, UK and US and Saudi. That's why they are not being threatened by the peaceful opposition.
Let me get Mr. Mikhail back in on this, sir. Mr. Mikhail, in your perspective, then what must happen in order to stop the US and the UK from supporting the Bahraini regime with military equipment and security contracts, or even some Americans and Brits have even been involved in actually training as well as equipping the same security forces that are engaged in the violent crackdown?
This is a good question, and frankly, I will be realistic. I do not expect or foresee a major change in U.S. foreign policy toward the Gulf areas. I will not read the newspapers one day and say the United States has stopped its relationship with the Bahraini military, or the fact that sales to Bahrain in terms of military contracts have been halted. This is not realistic. But as I said here, there are some offices in Washington, D.C., either in the private sector, in the non-profit sector, or in the U.S. government, who have some knowledge about the Bahraini political system and who have also some acquaintance with the Bahraini opposition. I recall that I saw the representatives back in the 1990s, so the process has been going on for over, or actually more than 20 years. I would not expect any radical change in U.S. or in the U.K. policy. And I think even the U.K. now has some sort of a military base or a military agreement with Bahrain. But I see also many regional changes happening. Egypt is becoming a big player, Iraq is becoming a big player, and for sure, Russia is becoming a big player. So perhaps America's attitude and the UK's attitude toward Bahrain could change if they find that the balance of power is changing. Yesterday, I believe it was BBC that said, if you look now at the Gulf area, if you look at Syria, you have to take into consideration the Russian factor. Could Russia's relationship with the Gulf states or with Syria change America's attitude? Possibly, if America feels undermined or that its role is diminishing, they may try to broaden their points of contacts, and that could include the opposition from Bahrain and other countries. Mm-hmm. So I believe that the regional factors can be the biggest influence on Washington changing its policy. How will this happen and when? This is what we do as political scientists, to try to study and forecast all these changes, and we hope they are positive changes.
Well, Mr. Al-Hafda, during these 5 years of uprising, we've seen it all, from newborn babies being killed to the elderly, and yet this amount of repression seems to have done nothing to Sheikh Manama's main Western backers, which are the U.S. and the U.K. In your perspective, how much worse does the situation have to get before it gets their attention, or do you agree with our guests in Washington?
Well, I mean, I agree of a lot of what he said, but I mean, the situation, as you just said, in Bahrain is getting worse. I mean, we are talking about 3,500 political prisoners in Bahrain in a population of 500,000. It is very high percentage. And also, according to a latest report saying that Bahrain has the highest percentage of political prisoners in the Middle East. So the situation in Bahrain is getting worse. Bahrain is becoming a police state. There is no freedom of expression in Bahrain, and torture is ongoing. People are being arrested, and also one tweet, it could take you to jail. So I think the situation is, the human rights situation is getting worse and worse. And also the new tactic of the government of Bahrain, which is the nationalities being, revoking nationalities being used as a tool by the ruling family in Bahrain to suppress the opposition. So far, 262 Bahraini activist nationality were revoked by the ruling family in Bahrain. So I mean specifically about your question, I think the international community, I mean, they are aware of what's happening in Bahrain, and they should have one language. They should push on the government of Bahrain to have a dialogue with the opposition in Bahrain, to have a dialogue to release the prisoner of conscience, because what is happening in Bahrain will not serve anybody. Okay. It is the citizen who is the normal citizen, he's paying a high price for that. I mean, so I think this will not help anyone. The dialogue should be, they should release the opposition in Bahrain.
Stay with me, sir. Let me just get Mr. Mikhail back in on this before we have to break. But Mr. Mikhail, when we look at the role of Saudi Arabia and all the conflicts in the region now, we see that Riyadh has served a more and more aggressive policy in the region. Why have we seen more direct involvement by the Saudis now in the region? What has to be done in order to stop Saudi aggression?
This is a very important question, and actually it can be the subject of more than one program. But I'll try to be brief. I think the military and political leadership in Saudi Arabia finds many important stakes for its security policies to get involved directly. This has been very evident, not in Bahrain, actually, in Yemen, where the conflict enters or is entering its second year. The question is, two elements. First, can NATO and Washington review Riyadh's security policies? You should not get involved in Syria. You should try to establish a different security formula for the Saudi Gulf intervention in Bahrain. You should try to put a schedule for the termination of military operations in Yemen. I think the Pentagon discusses this with the Saudi military establishment, but again, very little information is known about it. Secondly, and this is more important, what transpires inside the Saudi leadership? There must be discussion among the ruling family, among the bureaucracy, among the national security apparatus, among the intelligence establishment, how Saudi Arabia defines and pursues its security goals. There could be some difference, there could be some agreement. Again, as just viewers, as analysts, we are totally immune from much information about what is going on. So it depends on how Saudi Arabia defines its policies, especially security domains, how much agreement or disagreement it gets from Washington. This is my own, crystal ball. I think the Pentagon discusses seriously with the Saudis the situation, but the White House is not aware of these serious strategic discussions because Obama is not interested in Bahrain.
And on that note, unfortunately, we are out of time. I appreciate both our guests for being with us. Said Yusuf Al-Mahafda, Vice President, Bahrain Center for Human Rights out of Berlin, and out of Washington, Nabil Michal, Professor George Washington University. Appreciate you both being with us. And as always, viewers, we thank you for being with us for another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thanks, and goodbye.